The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to a weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. On a recent weekend long reads segment, I recommended a piece by The Verge's Julia Alexander asking whether or not Netflix's recommendation algorithms were broken or maybe just borked. We're going to talk a bit about that today, but also, since Julia is on the Streaming Wars beat at The Verge, you know how much I love to talk about the Streaming Wars, and we are right about at the point where the battle is going to be joined in earnest. So, more about that. Please enjoy. Actually, I don't follow Netflix closely enough to know this, but somehow a bunch of shows got canceled lately that got on my radar. Like, I guess they must have been high profile shows. And I would have to imagine that this happens all the time, but somehow it feels different. Like, has there been a bunch of shows that have gotten the axe lately?
I think we're seeing a couple of things happening. So the first thing that happened is two shows that were beloved by fans and critics, called Tuca and Birdie and The OA. Tuca and Birdie being an animated adult series, and The OA kind of being a sci-fi weird niche show, got canceled. The first Tuca and Birdie after one season, The OA after two seasons. And we're seeing, I would use the word outrage, which I don't usually use, about their cancellations. The interesting thing about this is that canceling shows after one or two seasons is not particularly new for traditional broadcast television. This happens quite often. But the difference is that up until a couple of years ago, Netflix wasn't really canceling anything. Netflix was increasing its spending size on content. And the idea was just buy, and they'll live on the platform, and we can build our own library. So I think what we're seeing happen is people realizing that, oh, Netflix has actually become this type of cable, this type of network that we're used to seeing on traditional TV, which they never position themselves as. So there's this really big moment of confusion happening among Netflix fans and then people who just watch television.
So the idea essentially being the longtime gravy train where they'll fund anything you want, they'll bring back any show you want and let it run for as long as the showrunners want it to go. That gravy train is coming to an end. And we've heard rumors about that, right? That maybe internally they're trying to watch their pennies a little more, and they've been telling people internally that maybe shows that are kind of weak have to go.
Right. So Netflix uses a specific type of measurement to determine whether or not a show should be renewed. And it's called efficiency. That's what they refer to it as. Efficiency to Netflix essentially means when we release a show, will it attract new subscribers, and will it keep those who are at risk of canceling their subscription, will it keep them? And so shows like Stranger Things hit both of those. Stranger Things new season brings in new subscribers and tends to keep subscribers who are maybe thinking of canceling. A show like Tuca and Birdie does not. Now, the issue, as Tuca and Birdie creator Lisa Hanawalt tweeted, is that when you think of Stranger Things, think of the amount of trailers and tweets and marketing and then the front page placement that show got from Netflix. When you mention something like Tuca and Birdie or The OA, one, it didn't get much marketing, which has always been an issue with television. But the difference is when we think of Netflix, which is an internet TV type thing, Netflix relies heavily on a recommendation algorithm for a lot of its shows, and not actually similar to YouTube, because there's so much. Netflix has the idea that we are going to recommend to you things that we think you would like based on what you've watched. So if the algorithm doesn't recommend a show, then we don't know how many people might have actually liked it, might have not, because we don't know how many people actually saw it on their account. And that's the big difference between Netflix and the way that shows are spread and traditional linear TV. When you think of, like, you open up your TV guide and at 8 p.m., there's the same show for all of America who are watching.
Right. So I think I mentioned to you, I featured your Medium piece about this a couple weeks ago. I'm going to quote from it real quick. You wrote, "I'm the optimal subscriber for Netflix to recommend Tuca and Birdie to. Not only have I watched every episode of BoJack Horseman more times than I can remember, but I watch every cartoon Netflix releases." So the idea would be, if Netflix's algorithms work the way that we assume they do, even if I never would have gotten Tuca and Birdie on my launch screen, you clearly should have.
Exactly. And I didn't.
And so what do we know about why that might not have happened?
That's the frustrating thing for us, and I would imagine even more for creators, where we don't know why that didn't happen. And Lisa Hennewald, again, the creator, also doesn't know. And so we've seen Netflix respond to these kind of situations. We've seen CEO Reed Hastings and Ted Sarandos, who is Netflix's chief content officer. They've basically come out over the past couple of investors calls and said, we want to be more transparent with creators. We want to tell them how many people are watching their shows. We want to explain to them what's going on, but we're going to have to do that at our own time. Remember, this is a network that not even two or three years ago, their creators were sitting at a round table, I believe, talking to a Hollywood Reporter, and Jenji Cohen, who created Orange is the New Black, easily one of Netflix's longest running shows, if not actually its longest running show, saying, Netflix is great. The only things they tell me when it comes to ratings are it did good or it did very good. I don't actually know.
Right. Even like, even the showrunners have absolutely zero data.
They used to have zero data. I believe Netflix is now beginning to be more transparent, but it's not like every creator is being told. It almost feels like a select few are being told how much their shows are doing.
It's part of that because, remember, you know, Netflix's model is we buy everything. There are no residuals. You don't have ownership. Although maybe that's different for like the for some of the larger people and some of these deals now with these $250 million deals, maybe that's different. But is it because since they own it, they don't have to tell anybody?
I think it's because they don't have to, because Netflix has always positioned itself as not TV. Like, it's a network, but it's not a network because it's on the internet, because they do everything differently. Think of how Netflix releases TV, right? Everything comes out at once. You watch it when you want. So we're not going to have first day window, second day window, week windows publicly. They have it internally. They're looking at it internally the same way HBO executives would look at their internal data. The difference is we can see how much HBO or NBC is doing because we have Nielsen ratings. And we can clearly see, yeah, no one's really watching this. Maybe it's the time slot, but maybe there's just not enough interest. So we're going to cancel the show after one season. Again, this is normal. This is how television works, and for good reason. So then they can put their funds into a show that might do better. But with Netflix, because everything is so secretive, we don't know what's doing well and what's not. And creators don't know. And so it must be so frustrating to see your show be canceled after one season, not know how many people watched it, not know how many people homepages it even appeared on, and then see Netflix strike $250 million deals with the creators of Game of Thrones, or $300 million, or I think it's $350 million deals with Ryan Murphy, who created American Horror Story. And that's got to be, as understandable as that is from a business perspective, because again, Netflix is looking to compete now, it is, I imagine, really daunting to creators. And Netflix used to be this really great haven for creators who could do stuff that traditional broadcast television just wouldn't have let happen.
Yeah, I have to believe that it's maybe a have and have not situation, because I have to believe that, like, if David Fincher wants to get some sense of the numbers, they're going to tell him. But
I imagine.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong about that. But let me come back. What was the metric that you said? It was the efficiency that they use?
Yeah, it's called the efficiency metric.
Okay, so let's come back to your example. You should have gotten Tuca and Birdie. If there's a new season of MST3K, that should be first on my screen, you know. But I wonder, because I've been trying to think about why this, like, any kind of rationale for this. Like, is it a situation where they, I mean, they know who we are. They know you're, you know, young, urban, you're not going anywhere. You're not canceling your subscription. And so it's not that they feel like that they can abuse you and not entertain you, but like maybe they just don't, they're putting their efforts elsewhere. And so they're not gonna, but then even why would they do that? Because there's no extra cost to serving you stuff that, that will keep you coming back.
The big thing that is happening and the reason that we are now talking about the way that Netflix is changing is because for the first time in a few years, in a very obvious and tangible way, Netflix is changing. And the biggest reason for that is because, well, there's two, but it all comes back to competition. Now, for the first time, Netflix is actually going to have competition. They've been able to basically monopolize streaming prestige type TV on the internet. And now in the next 8 months, Netflix is going to have huge competition from like mega conglomerates, including Disney, AT&T, NBC, Universal, Amazon, and Apple. Like it's people, especially when you look at Amazon, Apple, AT&T, and Comcast, there's a lot of money coming in from different areas that they can invest into content and not necessarily have to worry about it as much. Because they're, especially you think of Amazon, right? Amazon's making money on the retail side. Prime Video for them is like a fun thing they can do. And it definitely drives part of their business, but it's not the core of their business. And that sets them up in a really interesting way. Netflix doesn't have that. Netflix, all it has is content. And so with losing series like Friends in the Office, which I refer to as snack type content. It's what you stay on Netflix for. It's what you finish Stranger Things, but then you don't cancel because you want to watch The Office. Losing that and then not having any major shows that right now really can compete with Disney, which is launching its service next month. All of that points to Netflix needing to change how it's doing its business, like point blank. And so the efficiency model comes into play because the efficiency model goes, we don't have time anymore to say, maybe the show picks up in season 3 or 4 and it doesn't matter because it's adding to our library. They need to say, we need a hit every single quarter to continue bringing people in.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I actually did a small segment this week about Big Bang Theory and its and 2.5 Men are probably going to go to HBO Max for like $1 billion or something like that. I saw you on Twitter talking about how Seinfeld is the next big one to go and is probably going to have some sort of huge bidding war, but it's like weirdly super, super complicated in terms of like who the hell actually owns Seinfeld.
Yeah. Seinfeld is, I should write an article about this before my editor tells me to, but Seinfeld's a really interesting position. Seinfeld, almost like Friends, but even more confusing. So essentially, Seinfeld aired in the 90s as an NBC show. NBC then sold the digital rights to Warner Media. Warner Media sold part of those digital rights to Sony. And Sony was the one who negotiated with Hulu, now owned by Disney, to have Seinfeld on that platform. So when Seinfeld comes up for renewal on streaming. I believe it's 2021, but it might be 2020. There's five major companies that, to an extent, have a hand on Seinfeld. And that doesn't even talk about bidding. That's just like, hey, some of us, like, we kind of have a right to this, but we also kind of don't, because so much of it was sold so long ago, which gets into, like, the really interesting part of streaming in general, which is these companies, no one really had the foresight about what was going to happen on the internet. And so everyone sold their rights in, like, the early 2000s, 2010s, everyone sold their rights. And now they're all clamoring to, like, fight to bring them back, because they're launching their own streaming services and they're building it around exclusivity, which is why you're seeing shows like Friends and The Office sell for $400 million, $500 million for, like, five-year contracts.
Well, because, you know, even 8 or 5 years ago, they were all thinking that this is free money that's just landed in our pockets. It's just additive. But now each and every one of these is, like, strategically crucial. Like, it's a choke point, and so it's more valuable than just, you know, making $100 million here and $100 million there.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Harry Potter, right? Harry Potter, one of the biggest franchises in the world, with bar none. Warner Brothers, who owns Harry Potter, sold the digital rights to NBC Uni. They were like, yeah, we don't really need these. We're going to sell them off to you. Now, Warner Media is about to launch HBO Max, which will include both TV shows and movies. Having the Harry Potter collection would be great for them, because the one place you can watch Harry Potter, except that NBC Universal, which is also launching a streaming service, has the streaming rights to Harry Potter. I believe through 2024, it might be through 2025. So that's a huge franchise that, because Warner Media was like, we're just going to license all of our content, we're going to give it to Netflix, we're going to give it to NBC Uni. Now they're fighting hard to bring it back, but they have all these deals that they have to, like, wait out or basically buy out. And so that's why you're seeing shows like Two and a Half Men and The Big Bang Theory being reportedly, like, looking to be reportedly sold for $1.5 billion. Because these shows, they think, will act as the exact type of snack content that they need.
Right. Your concept of the snack television is, in a way, for certain use cases, more valuable than the, oh, I've got to see that new show, it's appointment viewing, it's whatever, or it'll draw new people in. Like, people need that snack comfort food TV.
Right, because that's exactly it. You need your tentpole. I think, and this is where Disney is perfectly situated, because Disney is going to go, we're converting a bunch of our movies to be Disney Plus exclusives. I just saw a report that Obi-Wan, which was originally going to be a standalone movie, is probably going to be a standalone Disney Plus either film or series. So Disney has the ability to every quarter say, we're going to have a huge, huge tentpole thing that's going to bring people in. They also have a ton of old movies and TV shows that right. people really want to continue watching. So Disney's situated where they're going, not only are we the cheapest streaming service at $6.99 a month, but we also have everything that you want.
Right. They have the snack, because of the Fox deal. They've got, like, The Simpsons and Family Guy now too.
Yes, exactly. I think they have, like, National Geographic, you know, to compete with Netflix's kind of nature documentary. Mm. They're in a situation where, you know, CEO Bob Iger of Disney, on a call with investors, said this is the most important product launch of his tenure. And this is a man who bought Pixar, Lucasfilm, Marvel, and Fox. Streaming is everything.
Real quick, before I let you go, let me just get your take on a couple things. You wrote recently, near and dear to my heart, you wrote that Star Trek is probably Viacom CBS's best chance at winning in streaming, which is ironic considering how they've mismanaged the Star Trek property for 20, 25 years. But go into that a little bit, because I am all in on the Picard show, and I'm already planning my wrap-up podcast.
Yeah, I mean, so essentially it's the Disney play. It is, for the first time, CBS and Viacom, which originally split in 2005, I believe, they're back, which means all the rights to Star Trek are back with one company. So they can do the multi-level, we're going to release a new movie, We're also going to release a animated series on like Pluto TV, which is their free streaming service. Then we're going to release even more CBS All Access shows. And all these are going to play into the same universe, right? So this is what Disney's doing, which is like, you have to go watch the movie, but then something in the movie will reference something in the show. So you have to go and watch the show. CBS is one of the few conglomerates that can actually get away with doing this because they own so much intellectual property that they can do this with Star Trek and Mission Impossible. And it's like, we're just going to build worlds that will bring people in. Once they're in, they have arguably the biggest library of any streaming service. Like, they have a huge archive of shows that people want to watch. And so it's like, once they fix CBS All Access so that it's no longer a piece of garbage to actually watch, it could shape up to be a huge competitor, because Viacom and CBS are now one company. And that means that digital rights, which is the heart of the streaming wars, are all under one roof. So that's basically what that is.
What's your take on how many streaming services most people will subscribe to? Because people are, you know, openly saying this. It's not going to be seven. No. What do you think? Could it be three?
This is the other piece that I need to write. You know what people keep forgetting when we talk about streaming wars? Is sports.
I'm not forgetting that, no.
The most important streaming service in my life is my NBA League Pass. And that is like the one thing I wouldn't give up. And that's $18 a month. Let's round up to 20. That's $20 a month that I'm paying for something. I can only, you know, on my budget, I can maybe add a couple more. And honestly, Netflix right now is not one of them. I'm looking, for me personally, I'm looking at, you know, NBA League Pass, which is $20. Disney's bundle, because that's $13, and I get three services, including Hulu and ESPN.
ESPN, right.
Plus. And then, you know, for me personally, I think I would spend the money on HBO Max, even though it's the more expensive one, which we think is going to be about $16, $17 a month. In terms of the content I want, I'm paying for HBO Now. I use HBO Now more than anything, and that's already $15 a month. So I would probably get rid of Netflix in a heartbeat. And I think that's scary for Netflix, because I bet you there are a lot of people who are like, well, I know I can have HBO and I'm going to enjoy it. And I know I can have Disney, I'm going to enjoy it. And then I know I need my one of my sports things, whether it's NHL, NBA, NFL.
Netflix is always weirdly always shied away from sports. Like, every time people have asked them that, they're like, yeah, that's not our ball.
I think if there was ever a company that was going to get into sports that wasn't Disney, because they own ESPN, it would be Amazon, because they're already testing it. It works for them. And more importantly, the cost to license sports is immaculate. It is not immaculate. Sorry, it's insane.
Insane.
And so you think about the companies that can actually viably do this. Amazon is like one of the few, because Amazon has so much money coming in from retail and from other areas that it's like, sure, we can spend the money and we don't have to think about it. It's like, yeah, it's a bet and it'll probably pay off, but who knows? Now, they haven't said much. We know they're testing with NFL. We know they're testing with other things. But if anyone's going to try to do a huge actual sports play, I think it would be Amazon.
It sounds like you're a little more concerned about Netflix. Like, I'm going to talk to Matthew Ball next month, who, you know, is the Uber Netflix bull in terms of, like, Netflix is playing 11th dimensional chess and all this stuff. But am I reading you right that, like, if you were Netflix, you're a little worried right now?
So Matthew Ball is like a hero of mine. I just want to be Matthew Ball. You can tell
me that. Okay.
But I think I wrote down in one of my articles, Netflix will be fine. The thing that everyone kind of forgets when we talk about Netflix is that they've hit, they haven't tapped out on the United States, but most of the people in the States who are going to have Netflix accounts have a Netflix account, and they know that. Netflix isn't worried, because Netflix is like, we're one of the only streaming services that is affordable and global. You know, they're looking at India, they're looking at Latin America. And the great thing about this is that they're spending a lot of money in these regions, they're ordering local shows, local movies, and those movies and shows, at least according to Sarandos and Hastings, are performing super well globally. It's why you have a lot of people in the States who are obsessed with Latin America South American shows. They're seeing this content play where they're like, you know, Disney can maybe build 12 million subscribers in its first year in the States. We're going to build 20 million subscribers in India and other parts of Asia and other countries around the world. So Netflix is going to be fine. I think they probably are like, how do we keep reinvigorating content for our domestic audience? I think they're wondering, how do we define who we are when we've got competition that is very definable? You know, you think of like HBO is definable, Disney is definable. So I think what we're going to see is them trying to cultivate a voice so that way people know what they are. But Netflix is going to continue spending money on content. They're going to continue building. So they're going to be fine. I just think I am kind of like, Netflix hasn't done much for me. And
you're personally bearish in your own personal life on Netflix.
Yeah.
I meant to do a piece on this myself. To me, the biggest issue for Netflix is Disney, because it prevents Netflix having control over pricing power, which inevitably Disney will bring up their price too. But until that happens, Netflix is stuck in the water. And I wonder what that does to their long-term spreadsheets and things like that. I'm going to let you go. This is the last question. Do you have a take on Apple's morning show teaser trailer?
I said this to someone and they said, please don't write that take. But my take is that as someone who liked The Newsroom, I'm excited for Apple to basically try to do its version of The Newsroom. I think it's great talent. It could be a disaster. And I'm still like, I'm here for it. I'm excited.
I love how the legacy of The Newsroom is the greatest show that everyone hate loves, you know? And then the ironic thing is like, this is a show about a medium and a format that essentially streaming has made redundant. So it's a weird
Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah. Okay. Anything you want to plug?
No. Follow our streaming coverage on TheVerge.com, where we're going to be doing a lot of it.
Loudmouth Julia on Twitter. Thank you, Julia.